Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Did it rain before the flood? Fred, I promoed this show this past week on Bob Enyart Live.
And the answer is no. And here's why.
So we're going to look at this question from a biblical and a scientific view. And there's disagreement on this amongst creationists.
Yeah. Answers in Genesis and some other creation organizations are teaching that it probably rained before the flood, but some leading creationists, including our favorite, Dr. Walt Brown of hydroplate theory fame,
yes,
is teaching that it did not rain before the flood.
Yes. So, and some of the groups might sort of equivocate. I don't mean to use that word in a judgmental sense, but they might say, well, it probably rained. Don't argue that it didn't rain before the flood. That's what they'll say, or it's inadvisable.
Yeah,
so they have their
right.
list of arguments creationists should not use, arguments we don't advise using, and Creation Ministries International, AIG, and others, they'll say, don't go to the mat on this one. Don't argue that it didn't rain before the flood.
That's right. But first,
yeah.
Regarding last week's show, which was one of my favorites, we've been getting really good feedback on this. And a lot of thanks for showing from the latest hard science, because DNA doesn't lie,
right?
That science supports the Bible and undergirds, of course, our faith in Jesus Christ.
Oh, that show last week was titled Major DNA Mummy Study. Out of Africa or out of Babel.
Yeah, we forgot to mention something. It didn't occur to us until after the show, right?
Right, that this was another confirmation of an RSR science prediction.
Yeah.
I just love this, Fred.
Yep, so a year ago at rsr.org/predictions, we had written about the obvious predictions of young earth creationism, which includes that Genesis, taken literally, predicts that genetic research will show mankind's distribution from where else?
Babel.
Not the out of Africa that they promote in the media,
right,
the secular science, National Geographic.
And the reason the secular world loves out of Africa is because Africa is not Babel.
Exactly.
I mean, if it turned out to be out of New Zealand, they'd be tickled pink.
Yeah.
As long as it's not out of
out
Babel.
Of Babel, which because the Bible says it's out of Babel.
Yes. So we have now appended this to our very popular list of evidence for the Exodus. That's at rsr.org/exodus. So you can find it there, too. That's more powerful evidence for the Exodus when you've got 1,000 years of ancient Egyptian DNA affirming the writings of Moses and contradicting the primary worldview of the history of mankind.
And you know that Exodus series we did, 8 weeks worth.
Yeah.
We got tremendous feedback on that. It was so cool. It's amazing the evidence that has arisen in really the last 10 years for the Exodus. I mean, it's just ballooned like crazy.
Yes. And so the major study we talked about last week of the DNA of 90 mummies of persons living in ancient Egypt, it shocked the researchers.
Mm-hmm.
And like we always point out, Fred, it's not because they learned something new. That's cool. But they're always shocked. They say they're banging their heads against the wall, their jaw dropped to the floor, all these descriptions, because what they learned fundamentally contradicted the expectations of their out of Africa model.
That's right. And, you know, scientists have already determined that there's only been one major migration of human beings across the planet.
Now that right there is fascinating.
Yep.
If we've existed for hundreds of thousands of years, why wouldn't we have crisscrossed the planet like 60 times? But genetics has shown that there's been one distribution of mankind around the globe. And also, remember the show we did, Fred, about the number of generations that account for virtually all human genetic variation?
Yeah, and it's 200 generations, and this is reported in the journal Nature. You know, we talked about 200 generations long before this was published because we figured that's about how many generations you'd have with a roughly 6,000-year-old Earth.
First approximation.
Yeah. It's funny that they arrived at that because that's what we've used before they ever said that.
So another RSR science prediction gets confirmed. By the way, that show that we did, that's at rsr.org/200.
Yeah, 200, and digits 200.
Yes, and this, with the ancient Egyptian DNA, it's yet another major scientific endeavor, and this time using 1,000 years of Egyptian DNA.
That's right.
I just love it.
Confirmed another RSR prediction that we made a year ago.
It's out of Babel, not out of Africa. Wow. Praise God.
So now back to tonight's topic. Did it rain before the flood? It's a good question. You know, it's a interesting.
Because the Bible brings up the topic.
Yes, it does.
So let's begin where we should always begin. And before we get to the science, let's begin with the scriptures.
Okay. So Genesis chapter 2, verses 4 through 6. This is the history of the heavens and the earth when they were created. In the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, before any plant of the field was in the earth, and before any herb of the field had grown.
Okay. So this is the history, right?
Yeah.
In the Hebrew, this is the generations of the heavens and the earth. And I think this is emphasizing that this account begins at the very beginning. Before the plants, before Adam, it's at the beginning.
And so it goes on, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain on the earth, not caused it to rain. And there was no man to till the ground. But a mist went up from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground.
So there's a question here. Was this period of no rain brief? Let's say, was it only 6 days long? Because the text says that it wasn't raining before God made man. Or was it a really brief period of only 3 days long until he made plants, like the text says, before there were any plants on the earth? So that's one perspective, that's one question. Was it a really brief period?
Yeah, and I think just because of the way it stands out, why would it be there? But anyways, maybe this is a description of the hydrologic cycle, the water cycle.
Yeah.
Explaining how the earth was watered for a couple thousand years until the flood and the beginning of the 40 days and nights of rain.
Another way of asking, and this is what you just got to, Fred, whether this description is something that is relatively significant or relatively insignificant. Is it very important or unimportant?
Yeah, so why is it there? But Genesis is saying that it did not rain, but a mist watered the ground for only 3 days or maybe only 6 days.
Right.
It seems to me that's a little insignificant of a point to make in this really a really information-rich text.
Oh, yeah, the creation account is brimming with stunning information. So why point out something that seems so insignificant?
Yeah, if it was just a few days.
Yeah, if it didn't rain for a week throughout most of human history and in most places around the world, that's the most normal thing.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't rain, as happens so often, dew gathers on the ground, on plants, overnight. That's normal also. Is this a dog bites man headline? Fred, we don't see those kinds of headlines because that's not news. Or is it a man bites dog? Huh?
Yeah.
That's
that
an
would
attention.
Get your, yeah, that yeah. definitely. What's that all about?
Right. Because what is being described in Genesis, is it very important or unimportant or relatively significant?
Well, of course, we believe it's the latter. And that is very important for understanding, you know, the pre-flood time, the antediluvian world.
Yes.
As it were.
So now let's look at what the Bible says about the rainbow. We read the text from Genesis 2, what it says about it didn't rain. Now you go to Genesis chapter 9 and you learn about the rainbow. And I think this will further confirm our understanding that Genesis 2 gives us a very significant statement about the world's ecosystem regarding it not raining, not for just a few days, but for many centuries.
Yeah, and I agree. I think this really enforces what we're saying here. So Genesis 9:11 starts with, Thus I establish my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth.
Yes. So, by the way, that never again, this is a slight tangent, a rabbit trail here.
Yeah.
But that's another indication that the flood was global.
Global. Yeah.
Because there have been plenty of local floods that have killed people and animals. But God's promise was to never again bring a global flood.
So it wouldn't make sense if, you know, we have all these floods we see now, and there are creation organizations and Christian organizations that believe in a local flood because they're compromising with secular science, and a global flood would tear up their millions of years of rock formations.
Yes, exactly. So there are about, in the text, in Genesis, there are about 100 indications that the flood was global. It is emphasized in every imaginable way, not local. And remember, we've talked about Christianity Today, the magazine founded by Billy Graham. They think that the earth is old. They reject the global flood. They even reject that God created Adam and Eve from the dust of the ground. They think they evolved from apes. And so, Fred, when Christians reject the young earth, they also end up rejecting the global flood.
Yeah, it goes hand in hand. And we've got a great video on that, rsr.org/trading-genesis.
Trading Genesis. Yeah, what a fun video.
Yeah, that conference you had at Pepperdine, I heard that went really well. Yeah. Pepperdine used to be, well, it's supposed to be a Christian college, right?
Yeah, allegedly.
Well, Harvard used to be Christian college.
Yes, right. And used to be, that's the right way to say it. Used to be.
Yeah,
Harvard,
unfortunately.
Princeton, Yale.
Yep, used to be. Yep.
Yeah, Pepperdine.
So going on, Genesis 9:12, and God said, "This is the sign of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. It shall be when I bring a cloud over the earth that the rainbow shall be seen in the cloud."
Mm. There's a constant emphasis here of in the cloud.
In the cloud. In the cloud.
That's interesting. So the implication to me hearing you read that, Fred, is that this is a new thing. It doesn't explicitly state this, but it seems to be the natural reading of the text.
That's right. And when we go through the science of all this, you know, with the laws of physics and what we know about water vapor and rain, I think, Bob, we'll readily see why there were no clouds before the flood. And so no rainbow in the clouds, as the, you know, as the text emphasizes.
Yes. Now, the refracting of light on the ground, let's say over a puddle or a waterfall, yes, but not a rainbow in the clouds.
Yeah, interesting. So just continuing with Genesis 9, "And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. The water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. The rainbow shall be in the cloud." So that's the fourth time, in the clouds.
Wow, that is emphasizing that.
"And I will look on it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. And God said to Noah, this is a sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth."
Wow. So the big deal here is that the rainbow in the cloud is the symbol of God's covenant with mankind.
Yep. And, you know, the homosexuals have co-opted the whole rainbow thing.
Oh, they also took the color pink, the word gay.
Yeah.
So we got to take all that stuff back.
We do.
And eventually we will, right?
We
will. The Lord will return.
Yep.
His kingdom of 1,000 years on earth, and then the new heaven, the new earth. So we get it all back. It's his creation.
Yeah. It's the unstoppable Hail Mary, as I call it. We get back to the 1-inch yard line, and then there's a Hail Mary. Jesus comes down. You can't stop this Hail Mary. We're going to score and game over. Scoreboard.
That's great. You wouldn't happen to have season tickets to the Broncos, would you?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So Answers in Genesis and other creation groups will point out that Moses never explicitly stated that it did not rain until the flood. And here they'll say likewise, the Bible doesn't explicitly say that there were no rainbows prior to the flood, but the text seems to indicate the opposite, both that it never rained until the flood and that there were no rainbows in the clouds until the flood. So now let's go to Dr. Walt Brown's book, In the Beginning, which we happen to sell here at Real Science Radio. In fact, people could get it by calling us or from our website.
Yeah, 1-800-8-NYART, or go to the store at rsr.org/store.
Yeah, perfect. So in Dr. Brown's book, it's in part three, the frequently asked questions section. This article is titled, Did It Rain Before the Flood? So, of course, Walt begins by quoting Genesis chapter 2, which we've already quoted. And then he asks, how long did this condition last? Some believe that this mist began the evaporation rain cycle. If so, the period of no rain was brief, and there was rain before the flood. Then Walt goes on to quote Genesis 9 on God's promise to never again flood the entire earth, a promise marked by a bow in the cloud, a rainbow. And Fred, for this article, I think you and I could largely read the article and comment on it.
Yeah, it's really well written.
We'll have to send Walt some royalties, maybe.
Yeah, it's easily comprehensible.
Yes.
It's scientific. There's a lot of really interesting science in it.
Yeah.
But it's very comprehensible. It's not like, you know, lots of weird equations and everything.
Exactly.
So Walt points out that rainbows form when raindrops refract sunlight.
Refract. What in the world is refract? Oh, why don't we talk about that just for a moment? In this context, light changes direction when it passes from one medium, the air, into another medium, water droplets, that are in the sky. So refraction. There's also reflection involved in a rainbow. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, Fred, when the light hits the back of the water droplet and it reflects off the back of the droplet, that actually impacts the formation of what we see as the rainbow.
The bow in the sky.
Yeah, so the refraction primarily, and also reflection.
So as we do, Walt thinks that this text suggests that the rainbows began after the flood, which would, of course, affirm that there was no pre-flood rain.
Yes, and he continues, others disagree, saying rainbows may have been visible before the flood, but afterward, God simply associated his promise with rainbows. However, if rainbows suddenly began right after the flood, the rainbow's symbolic effect would have been more unforgettable and more reassuring to the flood survivors and then their descendants.
Yeah, they went through a really traumatic event, and, you know, this would be more memorable,
yes,
of course. If it's something they've never seen before, it's like, this is super cool.
Yes. So then Walt writes, some argue that rainbows would have formed before the flood every time water splashed and droplets refracted sunlight. This argument overlooks that God's promise concerned rainbows in the cloud.
Yeah, that he mentioned four times in that sequence.
Yes, not a relatively few drops of water several feet above the ground. So you just said four times, Fred. God reiterates this, emphasizing that it's not just a little refraction over some splashing water, but a major refraction seen throughout the land. It's in the sky. Interestingly, there are two other places that we have discussed on this program in these first chapters of Genesis where repetition of a phrase helps us correctly interpret the meaning of the passage. Fred, do you remember the two times? One is with the firmament of the heavens, and the other is that Ham was the father of Canaan.
Yeah. Both are, yeah, super interesting stories. But, you know, Bob, it reminds me of an email that came into the show that you and I received. I don't know. It's been a little while.
A couple weeks.
It was really neat. This is from Renee, if I'm saying his name right.
Yeah.
And he's from Switzerland.
Yes.
Zurich, Switzerland.
Yeah.
So we have a radio listener from Switzerland. And he said that he found that in Genesis 1:8, it clearly states that the Rakia is called the heavens. Now, the Rakia, as you point out,
is the crust of the earth.
Is the crust of the earth. And, you know, I highly recommend people get your Genesis flood video, because you do a great job of explaining
it. So fun, isn't it?
It really is. So, Renee, if you're listening, that's a fantastic video. But Renee goes on to say, it was through RSR that I have become persuaded that I had to change my view. As you put it, Adam and Eve didn't have to die to go to heavens. That is what finally convinced me. And that really is a good argument. Adam and Eve were in heaven originally, right? They hadn't fallen yet.
The earth was part of God's kingdom of heaven.
That's right.
It was the kingdom of heaven on earth. And that's why the surface of the earth was called heaven.
Yep. And you've got, again, a really good expose on this whole thing.
And a great article, right, at rsr.org/firmament.
Firmament, yep.
It's one of the more popular articles on that topic, the article that Renee found all the way from Zurich, Switzerland.
Yep.
So four times in Genesis 1, again, it's four times, God says the firmament of the heavens when he's talking about the sky. But earlier it was the firmament, it was the rakia, the crust of the earth. Then after he talks about that, then he's talking about the rakia of the heavens. And that's why he repeats it four times. Now I'm talking about the rakia of the heavens, of the heavens, of the heavens, of the heavens. And then, Fred, the other instance where you got to look at the repetition so that you're focused on the intended meaning of the text is in the same Genesis chapter 9. In the very next verse, it says that Ham was the father of Canaan. And that is repeated, that Ham was the father of Canaan in this account of the cursing of Canaan.
Yeah, it's like, take note here. There's something important to recognize.
That Ham is the father of Canaan. So not to get into that whole story, folks can Google, why was Canaan cursed? And out of 500,000 articles on the web, we turn up at number 2, which is an honor. And that's why people around the world even are finding Real Science Radio. But that article is at rsr.org/Canaan. So we don't ignore the repetition of these phrases. They're helping us to correctly interpret the text. So this is talking about not a rainbow above some water being splashed, but the rainbow that God placed in the clouds.
So I would encourage people, go to rsr.org/Canaan, C-A-N-A-A-N, and then you can answer the question, what? It's kind of weird that a guy would be cursed for seeing his father naked.
Yes.
And right. Christians can't answer that very well, and atheists make fun of Christians.
Yes.
But there's a super solid answer for it.
Super. So stunning,
it is, and it's very solidly, yes. It's very convincing.
Okay, so then Walt goes on to write about a terrarium. And he says the Hebrew word translated mist in Genesis 2:6 is used in only one other place in the Bible, Job 36:27, and there it clearly means water vapor. So that's our understanding. It did not rain, but a water vapor came up and settled back down on the ground. So did the pre-flood earth act as a humid terrarium in which water vapor evaporated, condensed as dew without rainfall, and watered the earth?
Yeah, and including like the major rivers. You know, Genesis 2 verses 10 through 14 describes
four rivers out of Eden. Yes.
So could this terrarium type effect,
could it possibly explain all that water cycle?
Yeah, there's a lot of water
in the pre-flood earth. Interestingly, in Iraq today, the Mesopotamian Valley, you got the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers. Where in the world did ancient men get those names from? Well, they were two of the names of the four rivers flowing out of Eden back when God created. So that's why after the flood, Noah's descendants, they go down the Mesopotamian Valley. They're headed toward Babel,
mm-hmm.
and they begin to settle in between these two, between the rivers, Mesopotamia, the rivers. And like the Potomac River, Washington, D.C., George Washington, all that. So that's where they got the names for those two rivers. And it points back, of course, to understand who we are. We have to understand our past. And it is the Bible that does that for us, unlike any other religious book in the history of the world, taking us back to the beginning of the creation, even before the creation, before the foundations of the earth, and then the creation, Adam and Eve and the fall, judgment of the world through the global flood, and then the table of nations in Genesis 10, where all the nations originated, how they did, and then the dispersion at Babel, And then you're into the time of Abraham and the Israelites, which is more modern history.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all just so fascinating.
It really is. So Wall continues on the differences between the pre-flood and post-flood Earth. The pre-flood Earth was quite different from today's Earth. If the hydroplate theory is reasonably correct, at least half the Earth's water was under the crust, so Earth's surface had less water than today. Mm. There were large seas, but no oceans the size of the Atlantic or Pacific. Also, tidal pumping was continuously producing a vast amount of heat in the subterranean water chamber, which was about 60 miles below the Earth's surface.
And we addressed tidal pumping in that video that you mentioned, Fred. Folks could see that video on our Real Science Radio YouTube channel. They could see excerpts of it, or they could buy the whole video. And I just love it. It was a labor of love. In fact, Walt Brown bought, I don't know, a couple hundred copies of that video to send to his friends around the country. So it was a great honor. And he lists it on his website and in the 9th edition of his book to be published in the next few years. So great honor and real interesting. Tidal pumping with the moon, the gravity of the moon and the Earth, because the Earth's crust was above the waters, the effect was more significant than if it was all just solid rock. And so the crust was rising and lowering twice a day for a couple thousand years, and that caused the subterranean chamber to heat up, to go supercritical, and eventually for the fountains of the great deep to burst forth.
Yeah, but at the beginning of creation, when everything was very good, Walt Brown points out in this article that this subterranean chamber had quickly rose and reached a steady state condition. That is, heat losses miles above the chamber balanced heat production in the chamber.
Mm.
Therefore, no further temperature or pressure increases occurred in the chamber or crust.
So God didn't create the Earth as a ticking time bomb.
That's right.
It was because of the fall and the sin of mankind that the entire ecosystem was broken. And we see the consequences today.
And as Walt points out, did God have asteroids and meteors hurling towards us?
No.
Before the fall of man.
NASA, JPL just produced an animation of asteroids in their orbits, the ones we have documented. And when you look at it and they overlay it on the orbit of the Earth, it's actually horrifying. And you can see NASA's getting ready to shoot up some fascinating tests. There's a dual asteroid system that it's not coming especially close to the Earth, but it's a larger and a smaller asteroid orbiting one another, which we've done a show just on that. All the asteroids with debris fields or with moons,
mm-hmm.
which is 100% consistent with the fountains of the great deep and very difficult to explain by an atheist astrophysicist. But they want to see if they could impact the smaller asteroid and affect the trajectory of the larger one. Very interesting.
Yeah, that is.
Because, indeed, one of these things could hit the Earth. It's absolutely possible. So all this danger didn't exist before the fall and before the flood. Radioactivity on the surface of the Earth, the moon being beat to a pulp, and then all these asteroids, meteoroids, and comets.
Yeah. The hydroplate theory does a great job of explaining, like you said, the radioactivity.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, no one ever addresses that, but Walt Brown did.
Yeah.
But anyways, Walt continues on. The Earth today has a hydrosphere containing Earth's liquid water on land and in the upper few miles of Earth's crust. The pre-flood Earth also had a hydrosphere, but it was miles above the subterranean water chamber. No water entered the hydrosphere from the subterranean chamber miles below, only heat. Steady heating at the base of the hydrosphere, a few miles below the Earth's surface, evaporated some of the hydrosphere's water as steam or vapor.
Okay, so wait, let me understand this. With the tidal pumping going on,
producing heat,
there was heat generated, and that heat then evaporated surface waters. Okay, so far,
and that water becomes mist. Yeah.
Makes sense. You know what, Fred? I think we're going to notice as we go through Walt's article, it's loaded with science. And you tell me if you think this observation is wrong, but the creationists who say that they think it probably rained before the flood, they don't go through and present the scientific evidence for and against. They only tell a story, And the story is, well, the Bible doesn't explicitly say that it didn't rain before the flood.
Well, no, and you're right. I mean, that's a good observation, because when I researched this before our show, you know, I looked at what a lot of the big creation organizations believe on this, and it's exactly what you said.
Yeah.
There really isn't science presented, and, you know, and they're great at presenting science.
Oh, they are. They're fabulous,
they're fantastic.
We love them.
But on this particular topic, for whatever reason, I couldn't really find anything scientific. It was more just, we don't think you should use this as an argument because there's not a lot here in the Bible.
Yeah.
But they don't present any reason why there should be rain before the flood.
Wouldn't it be great to have a chart showing the scientific arguments for and against?
Yes.
Which you can do from Walt's article here.
So he goes on, that vapor traveling along millions of porous paths up through the soil and into the Earth's atmosphere was the mist of Genesis 2:6 that rose, in quoting Genesis, from the earth and watered the whole surface of the ground. In doing so, prodigious amounts of heat were ultimately radiated into outer space, primarily at night, which is interesting.
At night, less cloud cover, and so the heat would radiate out. Wow. And I think Walt will get into that more. Continuing with his article, if enough heat enters a drop of liquid water, the water becomes steam, water vapor. If that heat is removed from water vapor, liquid water returns, we call it condenses, as rain or dew. The heavy dew that settled and watered the pre-flood earth returned liquid water to the hydrosphere, completing the water cycle. Today, water evaporation is driven almost entirely by heat from above the hydrosphere, heat from the sun. Before the flood, water evaporation was also driven by heat from below the hydrosphere, heat produced by tidal pumping in the subterranean water chamber. The more heat leaving the chamber, the more water vapor produced.
And Bob, you know, we're actually out of time, but there's so much great science here. I mean,
would you like to do another show?
I think we need to do a part two to finish this up, but there's so much good stuff here.
Yeah.
I was really, a lot of stuff, I'm like, wow, that really happens?
Yeah.
It's really neat. Walt Brown does a good job presenting the science.
Fred, I have read Walt's article on this. Did it rain before the flood? I've gone back and looked at how he's developed it over the last 15 years. And every couple years, he added more scientific observations, and it just became better and better. And right here so far, the idea that today evaporation is taking place primarily because of the heat coming from above, from the sun. But before the flood, a significant amount, a far more significant amount of the evaporation happened from geothermal heat, from heat coming below the surface.
Yeah. And again, I want to point out that great video you have, The Global Flood and the Hydroplate Theory, does a great job of presenting this, and just can't recommend it enough.
Oh, thank you so much, Fred. So I can't wait till we continue with the next episode of Real Science Radio. Until then, this is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.